This is your daily news fix, the Daily Brief, right here on RCR.
Good afternoon, it's Friday, February 21st, and I'm Megan McNamara bringing you RCR's Daily Brief. Today, our Friday newsreader, Jen Bainbridge, will be bringing you the news. Then we'll hear some commentary and insight from RCR political analyst William McGimpsey on the potential public sector shake-up suggested by the new Public Services Commissioner, Sir Brian Roche, and brought into focus more sharply by revelations of data misuse at Manariwa Marae. We'll finish up the week, of course, with Natalie Cutler-Welsh and RCR Signpost. Now to the news.
Good afternoon, I'm Jen Bainbridge for RCR. Health New Zealand has failed to ensure sensitive health data was properly safeguarded at Manurewa Marae. An inquiry has found contracts lacked provisions for audits or compliance checks, allowing outside providers unrestricted access to files. The Public Service Commission found a failed system left census and COVID-19 data open to misuse. Health NZ is now urgently revising contracts to enable audits and conflict of interest checks. Despite following privacy laws, it never ensured providers met security standards. While no misuse of data collection has been confirmed, authorities stress the need for stricter data protections to maintain public trust in health information security. The Ministry of Education says New Zealand schools could face a shortfall of 1,250 teachers this year. A miscalculation in last year's forecast failed to account for staffing changes in collective agreements, leading to an inaccurate projection. The shortage is driven by immigration-fuelled role growth and increased classroom release time. If teacher supply remains low, the gap could reach 3,100. Primary schools will need 1,550 additional teachers over the next 3 years, secondary schools 1,035. Northland and Taranaki face the highest shortages. A heated exchange has taken place in Parliament after NZ First Leader Winston Peters and MP Shane Jones criticised Green MP Ricardo Menendez March for referring to New Zealand as Aotearoa. The pair questioned why someone who applied to come to this country in 2006 was allowed to ask a question that changed the country's name without the sanction of the people. The Green Party alleges that March was attacked for being an immigrant. Mr. Peters says most Kiwis believe the country's name is New Zealand. ACT leader David Seymour has taken a different view, saying people should be free to use either name and described Peters' stance as identity politics. Meanwhile, Winston Peters and ACT agricultural spokesman Mark Cameron have suggested that New Zealand withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement. The two MPs argue that if the world's largest emitters, China and India, are not significantly reducing emissions, then New Zealand's costly commitments make little sense. The US also recently withdrew from the agreement. Dark Times Academy, co-founded by researcher Byron C. Clark, has lost US funding for its course on countering misinformation and disinformation. The course, called A Bit Sus, was designed to train professionals, including Pacific-based journalists, to identify and challenge so-called misinformation. The cut comes as Elon Musk's Doge program continues auditing and reducing US foreign funding. Turning to international news now, and investment giants BlackRock and Vanguard have cancelled meetings with companies in which they invest following the introduction of new anti-ESG rules in the US. The rules tighten regulations on fund managers who seek to influence corporate behaviour. BlackRock, which manages more than $11 trillion in assets, has faced heavy political pressure in the US over its significant holdings in listed companies. And key health advisers in the Trump administration have announced efforts to halt the administration of mRNA COVID vaccines for all age groups in the US. Some within the administration reportedly suspect that the vaccines may be linked to alarming excess death reports worldwide. And now to RCR Quick Links. Environment Southland has been found guilty of failing to care for its wetlands, with a judgment describing them as significantly degraded in recent decades. Legal restrictions have been set after the oriental fruit fly was discovered in Birkdale, Auckland. The New Zealand Defence Force says no notice has been given of Chinese Navy ships operating in the Tasman Sea. The government has passed legislation to support overseas investment in the build-to-rent housing sector. The European Commission will introduce made-in-EU quotas and carbon product labels to revive ailing manufacturers while hitting climate targets. And NATO says it will hold large-scale combat drills as the United States' stance on Europe shifts. And that's RCR Bites News for today, 21 February. I'm Jen Bainbridge.
Before we get to William, let's hear a clip from an interview that Paul Brennan did yesterday with ACT Public Service spokesman Todd Stevenson.
Brian Roach has also been commenting on merging or eliminating government departments. What is your sense of duplication, inefficiency that exists in this country?
Look, a few comments on this. One, I'm very supportive of what Brian Roach has said. And, you know, ACT has long said we think there are too many government agencies and departments. And we obviously got core government departments, and then we have crown entities, and we've got lots of different organisations that the government controls. So I think it was really great that he's come out and said that. I think I do want to draw a bit of a distinction, I think, between New Zealand and the US. Clearly, our kind of public financing and accounting is very robust, Paul. And so while I do think there is money being wasted in government, we can actually probably identify and get to that. So I don't think we've got a lot of these systemic problems they're seeing in the US where they're actually paying money to the people that don't even know if they're still alive, et cetera. So,
well, some are 150 years old.
Yes. So I think, look, that is just, that is quite concerning if you're in the US government. So, look, absolutely, we think there's too much, too many government agencies in New Zealand. We do think they are spending too much. And, you know, ACT has called for a consolidation. We think a number could be disestablished or at least combined. So I think Sir Brian, you know, is on the right track, and we'd be very happy to help him out.
For more on this topic, William McGimpsey joins us now.
The long-awaited report on the Manurewa Marae scandal has finally landed, and it's critical of government agencies for their poor management of Kiwis' data and their failure to manage conflicts of interest. Let's hear what Public Services Commissioner Sir Brian Roche and Prime Minister Christopher Luxon had to say about it.
The public service has a duty to protect the personal information of New Zealanders. That is a non-negotiable value. This inquiry has found some agencies failed in their responsibility to protect and manage the sharing of personal information. While we don't know if personal information was improperly used, the opportunity was left open, which is unacceptable.
New Zealand has always prided itself on typically being a top five, top 10 country in the world around transparency and the quality of our governance and our public services. And this is a very big wake-up call. I think you've seen the Public Service Commissioner register that. He's taken his time to understand this issue. But more importantly, in my conversations with him, he's absolutely determined to drive the findings of this and the learnings from this into the public service. And he needs to do that.
The conflicts of interest issue is interesting because, in my view, the entire public sector has a significant conflict of interest. Adherence to the treaty principles and to woke ideology is so baked into the institutions that I don't think they can neutrally provide advice to an anti-woke government or serve the needs of the conservative half of the population. If you'll remember back to the scandal over the Public Interest Journalism Fund, one of the key problems there was that to get the money, media companies had to sign an agreement so that their coverage was in line with the principles of the treaty. And if you have to cover things in a treaty-friendly way, it means your coverage can't be balanced on treaty issues. You're contractually obligated to take a certain ideological line. The public service has similar problems. The whole idea of the treaty partnership is completely bedded into the institutions, which creates a culture within these agencies where taking a particular ideological line on Maori and treaty issues is expected. This again biases the policy advice coming out of the agencies and going to the ministers in a particular direction. But it's not just treaty issues. Wokeism, or diversity, equity and inclusion, is so thoroughly embedded across the institutional culture of the public service that it is very difficult, if not impossible, for any policy advice to be generated within these agencies that is anti-woke. The coalition government got in part, by appealing to the public's growing antipathy towards this ideology. So if the public sector is institutionally incapable of cooperating and moving things in this direction, that is a significant problem for our democracy. What is needed is significant top-down reform of government agencies. Many of the wokest government departments, such as the Population Ministries, the Ministry for Women, and the Ministry for Ethnic Communities, for example, should probably just be abolished. Public Services Commissioner Brian Roche is now talking about eliminating government departments. Good on him. I hope he takes a good look at these ones. But for all remaining government departments, anti-woke personnel need to be installed at the top of these agencies with a direct mandate from the Prime Minister or Cabinet to drive de-workification throughout the institutional culture. This will mean bringing in different personnel that provide more ideological diversity at all levels of the management hierarchy, so that the aggregate political and ideological views of a public sector more closely matches that of the ordinary New Zealander. But it should also mean a thorough review and redrafting of all rules and guidelines covering culture, values, HR practices, and management styles, so that the obsessive focus on wokeness is removed. We ought to have a culture within the public sector where analysts feel comfortable to suggest, draft up, and include policy proposals to ministers that go against woke ideology, and that if they do, they won't have to have an uncomfortable conversation with a colleague or manager or have it turn into an HR issue. And while we're at it, people should be able to tell the odd off-colour joke around the water cooler without it turning into World War III. America has Doge, Javier Milei has his chainsaw. I think now is the time for an axe to be taken to New Zealand's public sector.
Thanks, William. Now to Natalie and the RCR Signpost.
Thank you, Megan. Welcome to the Signpost and happy Friday, everyone. Natalie here, ready to guide you through our must-see shows and all the ways you can get involved to make your voice heard. I hope you caught last night's episode of RCR 360. It was brilliant. Alistair Harding talks to U.S. lawyer Michael Connett, who decisively put an end to the fluoridation debate.
One of the things that you hear when you're involved with campaigns to fluoridate drinking water is you hear things like, there's thousands of studies that have shown that water fluoridation is safe. And some of the more enthusiastic proponents of fluoridation say there's over 30,000 studies that show that water fluoridation is safe. So, you know, I think one of the notable things in my case is I went to these government agencies and I didn't ask them for 30,000 studies or 1,000 studies. I just asked them for one study that, in their view, established the safety of water fluoridation for the brain. And they couldn't point me to one study.
I actually had a chance to meet Michael in person, and it's amazing to see the outcome of his 7-year court crusade. You can watch the full episode or the standalone interview with Alistair and Michael on the app. And remember to share, share, share. You can also catch Paul Brennan's chat with ACT MP Todd Stevenson on the Mariwa Marae scandal and Public Service Commission changes, and contributor Rachel Stewart about her upcoming RCR feature called Riding Shotgun, which is coming soon. You can expect sharp insights, bold perspectives, and plenty to think about. Paul also talks to Michael Arbon, an advisor to Senator Ralph Babbitt from the United Australia Party, on Australia's new hate crime laws. This topic is also part of the weekly roundup with Diwa De Boer and William McGimpsey, covering the Manuera Marae and IPCA reports and the latest on Ukraine. And in Media Matters, Marie Buskey and Marty Gibson dive into crucial government appointments, media regulations, and the Cook Islands' relationship with China. And don't miss Perigo's Perspective, where Lindsay Perigo shares his honest views on the coalition government's performance. Plus, catch up on the latest adventures of Oinky Lux over at Kiwi Farm. New content is released daily at RCR. To discover what's new, click on the sleek latest feature at the top of the app for easy and effortless listening. Lastly, the fight against fluoridation in New Zealand is gaining momentum, with councils taking a stand and communities pushing back. Now is the time to act. You can share our key resources, last night's RCR 360 episode and Alistair Harding's Fluoridation on the Brain documentary, and book a meeting with your local councillors and MPs to make your voice heard. We are closer than ever to a breakthrough, but it is up to all of us to keep the pressure on. We love hearing from you. Keep the feedback coming on text 2057 or email inbox at realitycheck.radio. That's all from me for today. Have an amazing weekend, everyone. Megan, back to you.
That's all for this week. We hope you've enjoyed the coverage and insights we've shared. You can catch the full interviews on the website or app, and all the links from today's show are listed below. Have a fantastic weekend, and we'll be back Monday with another edition of The Daily Brief. Until then, see ya!